5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
The story you're about to hear on Love, Lust, Fear is true. Some names, places, and other identifying details may have changed to protect the storyteller. Love, Lust, Fear may contain graphic language and depictions of sensitive situations. Please listen with caution. Next on Love, Lust, Fear.
I was raised in a very strict household. We weren't allowed to date until I was about 17. I had to run it by my parents, and of course they said no, absolutely not, because good girls don't go out on dates with boys. He took me to the most extravagant restaurant. He was dressed to the nines, and he got me flowers and gifts, and you're beautiful, you're perfect. I've never imagined myself with anybody so wonderful as you, and I think that we could build a future together. He told me he was a successful realtor. I didn't know that wasn't the case. He's my husband, so my money is his money. He told me what I could wear, how I could wear it, how to wear my makeup, how to wear my hair, and he told me what type of underwear to wear. And if I didn't do it, then there was going to be some form of emotional punishment. I'm screaming at him at the top of my lungs, how dare you talk about my mother? How dare you ruin this? This is my mother's funeral. This is all about her. You have made this about you. He told me I was crazy and I was acting irrational and shame on me. And you don't talk to your husband this way. You need to be put in your place. And she said, you've got 30 minutes to get your cats in their carriers, get your purse on your back, and get out of the house or I'm going to call the police.
Lena was raised in a traditional Armenian family, where her parents passed on the markers of cultural respect and honor that one had to keep for oneself to protect the family name. Almost every outside family activity required approval, and casual dating wasn't allowed. In fact, Lena didn't even see that as a possibility until she turned 17. But in her early 20s, she ventured beyond her cultural constraints, eager to challenge them, and decided to build a non-traditional relationship with a man outside her culture. While it didn't last, it gave her a preview of what life could be like outside her traditional upbringing. But then she met a successful and culturally appropriate real estate broker who promised her everything she could ask for to live a bountiful life and raise a family. But soon, Lena found herself married to a deceitful narcissist who uses her cultural values to manipulate her emotionally. At the same time, she discovers that their so-called fortune and entire future are now living on borrowed time.
I came from a traditional Armenian family. My cultural heritage is from Turkey. My grandparents were both survivors of the Armenian genocide. My parents were first generation, I'm second, and I was raised in a very strict household. On the liberal side of strict, though, my father would say conflicting statements like, you can do anything you want to do in life as long as you put your mind to it. Whereas my mother on the other side would say, a girl's place is in the home taking care of her family she felt that that was the only way that my sister and I could ever succeed in life was if we married well and took care of our husbands and had lots of babies and made sure that we kept our honor intact. We couldn't get our ears pierced until we were seniors in high school. We couldn't even wear makeup until we were juniors in high school. We had to wear certain types of clothing, nothing too revealing. Waxing, shaving, all of that stuff happened at 16. That's when you blossomed and you can start showcasing your beauty, but modestly. We weren't allowed to date until I was about 17. And there was a boy, and he was the captain of the volleyball team, and he was very, very svelte. I was asked to go out on a date, but I had to run it by my parents. And of course, they said, no, absolutely not, because good girls don't go out on dates with boys. If I was to have a friend, quote unquote, that was a boy that I wanted to maybe go have coffee with or go to a movie with, at least a group of us, one of my cousins or an uncle had to go with us. It was very controlled. Relationship number one was family approved. And I actually ended up meeting him through a mutual friend that I had gone to school with. He was Kuwaiti, I was Armenian. And it was a lovely courtship, and it was perfect and idyllic because we had cultural similarities from the religious aspect, the food, the mannerisms, the morals. I married him when I was 19. We had two beautiful children together. And unfortunately, he had to go back to his country. His visa had expired. And even though we were married, they still sent him back. And he had duties with the Kuwaiti army that he had to fulfill. And he never made it back. Had he not gone, we probably would still be together today. And my life would be in a very different place. When I turned to a certain age, I just kind of said, you know what? I'm not going to be living such a strict life. I have to branch out. I have to meet people because this isn't going to be good for me, at least professionally. My second marriage, I married him to be a rebel because I was sick and tired of the chains of culture constantly haunting me and holding me back. And so I decided to break those chains and marry somebody that I went to high school with. And it wasn't Mr. Volleyball Guy. It was another friend of mine. He was a very lovely person, but culturally it was not right. And we were married a year and a half. It was amicable. We filed for a divorce and I went my way, he went his, and I haven't looked back. Guilt got the best of me and I got roped back into cultural constraints. In the beginning, he was very, very warm and encompassing and loving. He took me to the most extravagant restaurant. He was dressed to the nines and he got me flowers and gifts and you're beautiful, you're perfect. I've never imagined myself with anybody so wonderful as you. And I think that we could build a future together. And I looked at him at that point on our first date and I told him, I think that you're moving a little too fast. And I'm not quite sure that I'm in the same place you are, but let's take some time and figure this out. Maybe there is something there, but I would like to get to know you better. He looked at me and said, am I not good enough for you? Why are you saying this? What is the hesitation? We've been talking for weeks over the phone. And I said, well, yeah, talking over the phone is very different than seeing each other face to face. The man always goes to the woman. We say it's a shameful or amot in Armenian. It's amot if the girl goes to him. And so he told me he doesn't chase women, women chase him. I was shown everything that a girl could be shown, purses and jewelry and fine dining and clothing and all this stuff. Those things do not hook me. It's other things. But for some reason or another, he thought that showering me with gifts was the key to my heart. But what it showed me was that he had the means to care for me while I cared for family. My heart had a lot of red flags, but my logic was I don't want to be like my mother because my mom was widowed when she was 49 and I didn't want to end up like her. My dear dad passed away from cancer and my mother basically had no emotions left to take care of herself because she had poured everything into my dad. and into raising us. In my background, you need to have proof that you're going to be taken care of if the expectation is that you're going to stay home and take care of the children and the husband and the parents. And so when I saw him with all of these gifts and all of this financial stability, the expectation is that he's going to be able to care for you while you care for him. I told my friends, hey, I met this guy, of course, and they would see the progression of the relationship and they thought he was amazing because he was fantastic with them and he was wonderful with my family and my family really liked him. And the fact that he was Armenian too, that it was the ideal match because he was intellectually apt and he was respectful. Some of my friends are like, he's too good to be true. Something's got to give. When we got married, we went to Laughlin, Nevada, and we actually got married there after the Shriners Convention because he thought that that would be so fun. At the time of our nuptials, I was still going to school, working on my master's degree, and I was actually in my last semester. So I had 3 weeks until my capstone project was due, and I had to go back and I had to finish. And of course, that was a big problem for him because he kept telling me, well, no, you need to just transfer. You need to finish your degree over here because they've got the same program. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do that because I'm at the end. And if I transfer, then there are requirements that I will most likely have to fulfill and take more classes. He would constantly call me when I was meeting with professors or when I was at school in the library doing research. If I couldn't stay on the phone with him for hours, he would throw a fit and he would hold guilt trips over me. Like, well, obviously you don't love me. Obviously this marriage isn't important enough to you to where you feel the need to focus on that and not sacrifice time for me. I'm your husband. I come first. Everything goes to the back burner, including your education. He would call me all the time, so much so that towards the end, the last week, I could not get my capstone in on time and I missed my deadline. When I moved down there, it was a culture shock for me, but it was cool because I was able to meet other people from my same cultural background and we had a lot of commonalities, but sadly, I didn't have a chance to socialize because he'd never let me. Before we were able to find a place to live, we had to stay with his parents. And his mom and I really bonded. And she had given me a warning one night after they had a huge blowout and verbal fight. And he ended up storming out of the home. And she came over to me and she said, I'm sorry I have to tell you this, but I fear that he's going to end up hurting you. And he's not a good person. And he's never been a good person. And I don't know why you never saw it. And I looked at her and I said, well, I don't see that. I don't believe he's a bad person. And if you thought that he was a bad person for me to begin with, why didn't you say anything to me to warn me then? And she said, well, I didn't think that you would be blind enough to marry him. So he came back a couple of hours later and I was reading and his parents had gone to sleep and we went to sleep and we woke up the next morning and the dwelling, half of it was emptied out. His parents, in the middle of the night, after we had gone to sleep, had packed everything up that they owned and moved out and left him. When I had told him about it, your mom told me that marrying you was a mistake and that you were going to end up hurting me. And I don't believe her because you told me that your parents have abused you all your life. And he said, that's true. And the only reason why she's telling me that is because she wants to ruin his life and she doesn't want him to be happy. He told me he was a successful realtor. I didn't know that wasn't the case. So when he was showing me things, he was showing me these things with his parents' money, not his own. His parents would give him copious amounts of funding and cash whenever he demanded it. That financial stability came from his parents and not him. That morning, he had his oh shit moment, and I had my holy moly moment. He tried calling his parents, and they wouldn't pick up the phone, and we had no idea where they went. His dad finally called him and said, a representative from the place that we're staying is going to be coming by and picking up some important documents. and I might be going with them, but if I do go with them, you are to keep your distance from me. Later on that day, his dad came and he said, you were too hard on us. You're not a good person. All you wanted was our money. You took from us. Take, take, take. That's all you do. You consume until you feel fulfilled, which you will never feel fulfilled. And then he turned to me and he said, my sweet, I'm sorry to do this to you, but he's your problem now. I had an okay sized savings account. He's my husband, so my money is his money and vice versa, because that's how I was raised. We had to figure things out because the house his parents were renting, the lease was going to be up and we needed to vacate within 3 weeks. And so we had no idea where we were going to go, but luckily we knew somebody in Southern California and this man was amazing. He said, well, I have an apartment complex. It was tough because we depended solely on my savings until I was able to find a job. He was on his computer all the time. And he claimed that he was looking for jobs on Indeed and at that time Monster and Career Builder, just trying to find something. And because he didn't have a college degree, not even an AA, he was unable to find a job. We were about a week away from being evicted from our apartment because we were going through my savings too quickly. So finally, at the last minute, a friend of ours told me that we needed to go down to this homeless shelter because they might be able to help me. So we went down there and we walked into this place and we were like, we're about to lose our apartment and we need food and one of us needs a job. And so the CEO of the shelter actually said, well, we're looking for an HR coordinator. So you both can go interview and come back and see me when you're done. And so we went and interviewed both of us and we walked out of there with me having a job offer and a check to cover our back rent and for next month and food in our bags. As each month went by in our everyday life, little things started happening. He started to control when I can talk to my own mother and when I could go see her because she wasn't in the same city. So I went from seeing my mother on a daily basis to barely seeing her twice a year, which really killed me because I was really close to my mother. It progressively got worse and worse and worse. He started to degrade me and he got very controlling. He told me what I could wear, how I could wear it, how to wear my makeup, how to wear my hair. And he told me what type of underwear to wear. And if I didn't do it, then there was going to be some form of emotional punishment. It could be putting me down and making fun of my body or shaming me in some way or another or making me feel inadequate or intellectually inept. All in the meantime, he was using my money to buy whatever he wanted for himself. And he would buy Ralph Lauren clothing and he bought Ralph Lauren sheets and Lennox dishes and Tag Heuer watch and buy collectibles like comic books and all of this stuff. Now he wanted to become a DJ. And so he bought DJ equipment and then he wanted to become a chef. And so he bought knives and then camera equipment so that he could start recording YouTube videos so that he can grow a YouTube channel, make millions of dollars. I mean, he was very opportunistic and he used me every step of the way that he could. He knew what the hell he was doing because he knew the cultural background that I came from and the way that I was raised because he was raised almost the same, except he was a man, I'm a woman. And he knows that women are raised to be modest and dutiful and honorable and not to disgrace. And if I left him, then I would disgrace myself and I would disgrace him. So what kept me with him was my cultural obligations. My culture is what kept me there. The only time I was able to talk to my mother on a daily basis was in my commute. So my mom had called me while I was on my way home from work and she was crying and I asked her what was wrong. And she said, something just dawned on me. And I said, what is it? And she said, you're not the same person. And I said, what do you mean? No, none of us are the same people that we were yesterday. And I said, what are you crying for? And she said, no. She said, something is wrong. I can feel it. And she said, you're not you. And something is not right with you. And I am fearful that it has to do with who you were married to. And I said, well, Mom, he treats me well, which at that time I thought by not beating me, he was treating me well. That was when I started to take the rose-tinted glasses off and see things for what they really were. About 6 months after that, my best friend came down to visit, and it's the first time she had ever come to visit, which I was so happy to see her. And he ruined it. He wouldn't let us have girl time, basically. He wouldn't let us talk about other things other than him and what he was doing. And he dominated the conversation. And my friend was supposed to stay the entire weekend. And she actually ended up leaving the next morning. When I walked her downstairs, she looked at me and she said, girl, you need to get out. She said, he's going to hurt you. It's not going to be good. You need to get out. And she said, I'm sorry I'm leaving, but I can't stay in that place anymore, knowing that he's doing this to you. And I just looked at her and I said, well, I don't understand what the big deal is. He's fine. Nothing is going wrong. And I was justifying his behavior to her. And I did that a lot with my family because I didn't want them to know that it was as bad as it really was. A couple of months after that, my mother fell and broke her hip and was convalescing. And 9 months after that, she had passed away. I was sitting in our family room and my aunt had called to tell me that Mom had passed away. When I hung up with my aunt, I was sitting there in shock and I started to cry. And he walks into the room and he said, I don't know why you're shedding a tear over that bitch. She was a horrible person. And I looked at him and I said, why would you say something like that at this moment? Why? I don't understand why you have to be so mean. You don't talk about the dead like that, especially when they've done nothing to you. And he said, no, it's she didn't do anything for me. And that was when the light went on and I knew that this was the end. He ended up storming out of the apartment and walking up the street to this restaurant parking lot and started smoking. And I went out in my pajamas and my slippers and my sweatshirt and I caught up with him. He's screaming at me and I'm trying to defend myself loudly because there's traffic going by. And then he said, let's go get something to eat. And he said, if we get something to eat, maybe I'll feel better because I haven't eaten all day. And maybe I'm acting this way because I'm hangry. So we walked to the diner. We got something to eat and he was calm, like nothing had ever happened. And I'm just sitting here looking at this person in amazement, like, what the hell just happened? What did you just do to me? On the day that my mother passed away, we walk back to the apartment and I start getting things ready because we have to go to my hometown so that we can prepare for the funeral. So a couple of days later, we drove to Northern California and we were to stay at my aunt and uncle's house. Within the first hour and a half, my ex-husband started arguing with my sister and he called her some horrible things and he got very confrontational and combative with her. And she finally threw her hands up in the air and told my aunt, well, if he's going to be here, my husband and I are going to go get a hotel room and we're going to just stay there. And so later on that night, he grabs his cigarettes and goes outside. While he's out there, my uncle invites him to have a scotch over rocks with him. And so they're sitting at the table and my uncle is nursing one scotch over rocks and my ex-husband is on his third. And I had two of them myself. I'm not really a big drinker, but I was already stressed out. And so my uncle and my ex-husband got into this huge yelling argument with one another. It had just escalated. And my ex-husband was telling my uncle, you know, you hurt my feelings back in the day. You'd said this, 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 and this. And so my uncle said, well, if I said anything to hurt you, I'm sorry that I said something to offend you. It didn't mean to, but how come you didn't come to me
8 years ago when I first said it, when you said I first said it, and tell me then, I would have apologized, but I don't even remember saying anything to you. My ex-husband got up and stormed outside, and my uncle looked at me and he grabbed my hand and he was like, sweetheart, I'm sorry. He said, you guys have to leave. I don't want him here in my house. He said, you don't come into my house and disrespect me and expect to eat at my table and break bread with me. He said that it doesn't work like that. And I was stunned and I started to cry and I grabbed his hand back and I said, I understand. And I go, I respect your wishes and we will leave. And so I walked outside and he's sitting there smoking a cigarette. And he said, so what did he say? And I said, he told us we have to leave. And he goes, are you kidding? And I said, no, I'm not kidding. And he said, why? And I said, because you disrespected him in his home. So he took off his wedding ring and he threw it in the ashtray. And he told me he regretted the day that he ever met me or my family and that none of us would amount to anything. And then he stood up and put the cigarette out and looked at me and said, I want to go back to LA right now. And I said, I'm buzzed. I'm not going to drive to LA. And I said, you're drunk and I'm not going to drive you like this. And I said, let's just go stay at my mom's. And then in the morning, we'll drive back to LA and I will take you there and I'll come back to the funeral. And he said, fine. So we drove to my mom's house and we rolled up and then we got out and he looked at the house and he said, yeah, I can't do this. I'm not staying here. He said, either you take me back now or I start walking. So he guilted me into taking him back to LA. And I had started to sober up. And while we're driving to LA, I'm speeding like crazy because I want to get there and get him out. And I'm screaming at him at the top of my lungs, how dare you talk about my mother? How dare you ruin this? This is my mother's funeral. This is all about her. You have made this about you. He told me I was crazy and I was acting irrational and shame on me. And you don't talk to your husband this way. And you need to be put in your place. Women don't do this. So finally, when we were about to exit, he looked at me. He said, you know what? He said, I think we both need a good night of sleep. And once we have a good night of sleep, we can talk about this in the morning. And I was so done arguing with him. I just looked at him and I said, yeah, yeah, you're right. And we went upstairs and he crawled into bed and I crawled into bed and I waited for him to fall into a deep, deep sleep to where I knew that any movement that I make wouldn't disturb him. And so once he got into that state, I literally slid out of the bed while I was on my stomach. And I got on the ground and I crawled out of the bedroom and I grabbed my cell phone and I closed the bedroom door and I went into the living room and I called my sister. And my sister was at my aunt's house and both of them were talking to me. And my aunt told me, first of all, are you okay? Are you safe? I'm okay. I'm safe. We made it back. And she said, good, you need to get out. And I said, how am I going to do that? I have no place to go. No one wants to take me in. Everybody's made that clear. And she said, who is everybody? And I told her, well, he told me that you all hated me. And she said, that is very far from the truth. She said, all of us love you. We would never turn our backs on you. You need to pack your stuff. You need to come home. And I said, I can't do that. I have the cats. I have all my stuff here. I have a contract I have to finish. And I said, I just can't leave. And she said, you've got 30 minutes to get your cats in their carriers, get your purse on your back, and get out of the house or I'm going to call the police. I went into our bedroom as quietly as I could. I grabbed all three cat carriers and I brought them to the living room. And I grabbed my jewelry, my passport, my cash that I had, my spare cash, and anything that was important. And I shoved it in my purse. And I got my cats wrangled into their carriers and I took them down one by one. And I started the car, let the air conditioning go. And I grabbed my purse, put on my slippers, and I drove away with what was on my back. And we started our trek back to Northern California. 3 hours later, he calls me and he said, hey, where are you? And I said, I'm on my way back to Northern California. And he said, oh, for the funeral. And I said, yes. And he said, well, when are you coming back? And I said, I'm not coming back. And he said, what do you mean you're not coming back? And I told him, I said, I'm done. I'm leaving you. I can't do this anymore. You are not a good person and you are not right for me. goodbye, click, I hung up. And of course, he blew up my phone about a billion times, but that was it. I would come back to Northern California and rebuild my life. I didn't want to go back because I didn't want him to find me. But then again, I had stuff in the apartment that I needed to collect that belonged to me. Because I had left my ex-husband, he was forced to find a job rather quickly. And it was one of those pay under the table with cash type of jobs. And while he was at work, my neighbor that I had gotten really close with told me whenever he would leave, and I would go to the apartment and I would pack up as much of my belongings as I possibly could into shopping bags. So this last discussion happened my last night in Los Angeles, and he tried to get me to stay, and he actually tried to manipulate me by saying that maybe we can have sex one more time, which, you know, if I'm going to be honest, it wasn't even that good when I was with him. I had actually told him that the reason why I was there was because I needed to inform him of when we'll turn in my keys, number one, and number two, to inform him that I would be filing for divorce. I wrote him a check to cover his rent because I was still on the rental agreement, and me being the nice person that I am, I'm like, well, I know that this guy is going to end up homeless if I don't help him out. So here's a check for the month that I am currently on the lease agreement, but also an extra month. My aunt and uncle came from Northern California, and we were going to do a caravan, and they loaded up their car with half of my stuff. And then we loaded up my car with the other half of my stuff. And my final freedom ride happened at sunset over the grapevine back to Northern California. And it was an amazing, beautiful feeling. I remember when I was at the very last part of the grapevine where it opens up and you see all of the fields, and you see it was a clear day. There was no smog. And I just remember feeling so free and liberated. And I started to cry because it was so beautiful. I never had to go back to LA to that person again. And it made me feel beautifully happy. I loved my mother dearly, and I would have sacrificed a lot for her. But my mother was gone and my father was gone. And that freedom ride was more than just leaving my ex-husband. It was me spreading my wings and being able to live my life the way I wanted to without the constraints of my culture looming over me. The weeks and months immediately after leaving, he tried every manipulative tool that you can imagine, because he really did not want to be alone. And he knew what his fate was. He knew what was going to happen. And then when he realized that it wasn't going to work, he tried different tactics. You know, he tried threatening me. I'm going to make you pay. I'm going to come and get you. I know where you live. And, you know, your house is not secured. I can do whatever I want. He would tell me all the time that I was a worthless piece of shit and that it was because of me that his life has been made hard. He actually became homeless. He was evicted from the apartment that we shared, and he actually lived at some shelter. I have no idea where. And at this time, I had just started a new relationship. My friends always say, you know, I don't know how you could do this, how you just moved on so quickly. And I'm like, you have to understand, I checked out of the marriage a long time before it was over emotionally. So it wasn't that difficult for me to move on to my current husband. And he's wonderful, by the way. He accepts my children, whereas my ex-husband did not accept my daughter and didn't even like the idea of my son. I lost my son when he was an infant, but he was always in the forefront of my mind, and my relationship with my daughter had suffered. My husband is, because he's Native American and their culture is very different. He comes from a matrilineal culture where I come from a patrilineal culture. So the fact that he is a male feminist and has empowered me to find my voice and to be me without constraints of culture is amazing.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started today for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com. This is the new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits, Sharia, who's making progress with meds, and Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at weightwatchers.com. Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers, watch it work.
When I interviewed Lena, I asked her to share more perspectives on cultural constraints and any advice she could offer someone in a similar situation.
The opportunity presented itself because my mom had passed away and I had inherited this house, and I was able to break the chains of cultural constraints, and I had it easy. But there are women out there that don't have it as easy. What we've had to overcome is amazing. And being a Middle Eastern woman on top of that, there's a lot, because we do have brains, obviously. We're not dumb. And most of us eventually realize the bad situations that we're in. Not all of us end up in bad marriages. I'm just being honest, because I want your listeners to understand that we have the beautiful culture, but not all Middle Eastern men are bad. Okay. Most of them are honorable, but sometimes you will find one that is a dick or a jerk. And I would just tell them, if you're in a situation where you're dealing with a narcissist and you're married to that, start planning, look for a way out, stash money away, get your jewelry and hide it. And when the time is right, it's going to present itself, and you get the hell out when you know you're supposed to leave, and don't look back. And don't fall for the manipulation, because they will use the manipulation because they don't think that you're going to get any better than them. I actually talked to my best friend who was similarly and amazingly going through the same thing I was going through at the same time, because her ex-boyfriend was the exact same shit that my ex-husband was. And I didn't know it until after I had moved back to Northern California, and she opened up to me and told me that this is the reason why she had recognized what my ex-husband was, because she was experiencing the same crap with her boyfriend.
I also wanted her to reflect on how gender politics played a role in her ordeal and reflect on the sacrifice and impact her mother made for her.
You don't have to sacrifice your honor. You don't have to do things that you don't want to do. Don't let your gender hold you back from doing the things that you want to do. My father was a dentist and my mother was a concert pianist. She met my father and got married and lived happily ever after, of course, feeling saddened because she gave up her dreams of being a concert pianist because she was raised that being a wife and a mother were more important than dreams of playing the piano in front of hundreds of thousands of people. And so my mom thought that she had to sacrifice everything for her family. And I thought I had to sacrifice everything for my family. I often give credit where credit is due. And I believe that if my uncle hadn't have kicked us out, none of this would have happened. My aunt also said, if your mother hadn't have sacrificed herself, none of this would have happened. And I looked at her and I said, what do you mean sacrifice herself? She goes, your mother knew what was happening to you. She said she was in a coma. And she goes, I have a feeling that she knew what was going on with you. And she just decided it was time for her to go, which was amazing.
And finally, more details about what her freedom ride really meant to her.
Well, Jake, I'm going to tell you, that last ride over the grapevine, I really was a cliche in that moment because I drove a Volvo at that time. The windows in my car were all down. I had a scarf wrapped around my head with only my ponytail flapping, my sunglasses on, and my Bluetooth in my ear. And I was playing Susie and the Banshees on the radio, and it was so liberating. It was amazing, Jake. I look back at that time, and even though I inherited a house that was nothing but bare bones and concrete, my husband and I have rebuilt this house, but in my infancy, in my cultural sobriety, this house had nothing. And I was sleeping on a makeshift bed that I lovingly call a hobo bed. That was a bunch of comforters that my aunt gave me and mildewy pillows. And it was me and my three cats and an ottoman and two green leather couches that my husband would sleep on when we were dating. I look back on those days with absolute adoration and absolute love and fondness because those early days of discovering myself, it's been very interesting on this journey of cultural sobriety.
Even though Lena's cultural obligation kept her in a toxic marriage longer than she wanted, she soon realized that it was her then ex-husband who was using her cultural devotion to manipulate her. While Lena followed her mother's example of unwavering devotion to their culture, it was when Lena entered a life that took away her happiness and fulfillment that her mother stepped in, regardless of the restrictions of her own faith, and perhaps made the ultimate sacrifice for Lena to find peace and eventually love. The culture in which you were born into may not align with how you feel guided to live your life, but the question is, how can you carve out your independence from that culture and still maintain your place within a strict and devoted family? Len was fortunate that for her, above everything else, family came first. Until next time, I'm Jake Deptula, and this is Love, Lust, Fear. Every guest featured on Love, Lust, Fear selects a charity or organization to share. Please check the show notes on this episode for more details. If you or someone you know is being abused by a partner, there is help available. The National Domestic Violence Hotline provides essential tools and support to help survivors of domestic violence. Just call 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233. Or you can text START to 88788. If you'd like to be a guest on Love, Lust, Fear and share your personal dating or relationship story, you can email us at lovelustfearpod@gmail.com or DM us on Instagram at lovelustfearpod. Disclaimer. The information shared on this podcast should not be considered as professional advice or a substitute for seeking professional advice.